Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I have a rather unusual, even extraordinary guest for you who will join us at the break. I want to begin with the monster news that Kristen Sinema, Arizona senator, has quit the Democratic Party and registered as an independent. This is very, very significant. Right now, because of the Warnock stolen election in Georgia, and mark my words, you had Herschel Walker was the greatest athlete in Georgia history, Heisman winner, all kinds of awards, widely admired. There's no possible way this mediocre, I call him a faux preacher, Warnock, was deserving. But they're using the same method they stole in 2022. I mean, you know, if they can steal the midterm as massively, I mean, Georgia is a piece of cake. I'm worried that the Republican establishment, people like Mitch McConnell, are happy with the status quo and that they are enemies of the mega movement. I mean, just as we saw the absurdity of this Paul Pelosi attacker, supposed to be a mega man when he lived in a hippie compound and was all for the, you know, defunding the police, gay pride, transgender, all that happy horseshit. Is supposed to be a Trump supporter? Give us a break. He himself admitted that they were having gay sex, and then they had an argument over drugs, and he hit him with a hammer, which actually turns out to be a sex toy, a dildo shaped like a hammer. So you don't get the truth about any of this. There was supposed to have been a break-in, but the glass at the back window was on the outside, not the in, meaning it had been broken from the inside out, and Paul Pelosi was not only treated for a skull fracture, which occurred when he was hit with a dildo, it's loaded with batteries. I mean, it runs $95. You can find it on Amazon.com. Would be like hitting it over the head with a heavy flashlight, which appears to be how JonBenet Ramsey died, by the way, when her mother got so upset because JonBenet had wet the bed. I mean, it's a long, sordid story. She wrapped her up and painted a little heart in her palm. I mean, it was obvious who was responsible. And it's only because, from everything I can discern, and Dean Ryan's reporting on the scene, that the prosecution, the legal chain, was involved in sexual abuse activities with JonBenet Ramsey that it was never revealed what had actually happened there. Dean Ryan reported on this way back when. Excellent work. But now we have this Pelosi thing where the San Francisco district attorney claims there's no evidence even knew each other. Neighbors were saying he had the tendency to go to bars and pick up young guys and come home for gay sex. Even appears to have been the party was in the automobile when Pelosi was arrested for DUI and was unidentified. So we have all that in the background. Sinema leaving the party is absolutely brilliant. They had because of the theft in Georgia, and I have no doubt that's going to be the case. That's how they do it. The Democrats aren't winning any elections legitimately. Takes their alleged 51-49 majority because the Warnock win down to a 50-49 plus Sinema, but it turns out of that 50, there are two other independents. Which if Bernie Sanders is an independent, and then you got this guy up in Maine who's an independent. So if you look at legitimate party members, there are actually 48 Democrats and 49 Republicans with three independents. Now, this is going to give Joe Manchin a whole lot of power and influence. It's going to muck up any efforts of Biden admin to go forward. I think this was a wonderful thing she did. I've contemplated the possibility that Manchin might flip. If he were to flip, that would be so sensational because then potentially, if he were actually to turn Republican, then you have 50 Republicans and only 47 Democrats with three independents. I'm telling you, it's unwieldy. The Daily Mail, which is quite good at stories like this, had a very good summary over it. A massive blow to Biden. The enigmatic senator shocked Capitol Hill by leaving the Democrat Party. Her announcement came days after Democrats won 51 Senate seats. Biden and his party celebrated mere midterm gains. You need to mute, Luke, and I'll bring you in. Mute for now, Luke, please, if you can. Her announcement came days after Democrats won the 51st Senate seat. Biden and his party celebrated the rare midterm gains for a sitting president, but only because it had been massively stolen. I mean, even James Carville admitted that they were saved 57 seats, meaning implicitly we stole 57 seats from the Republicans and the four or five Senate seats. I mean, it's all outrageous. I've been talking about how it was pulled off during the False Flags and Conspiracies Conference, for example, 2022 just passed. I did a whole hour recounting all the evidence for the death of democracy right here in the USA. Now, we have a new, by the way, $5 special. So if you were to go to check it out, you could actually get that one or any of the other specific. And there's so many sensational presentations for only $5. And then you have it for 6 months. I encourage you to do that. But I gave a very thoroughgoing explanation of how the election was stolen. Sinema says she's going to continue to vote the same way she has for years. Nothing has changed of her values or her behavior. But it means that Joe Manchin is going to have this very powerful way because he, when it was 50-50, even though Manchin really controlled the power. This is excellent development. I'm very, very happy about this as a way to compensate for the massive theft of the election. And I do believe it's going to have a whole lot of consequences. Meanwhile, we have the release of these Twitter files by Elon Musk. I mean, listen, I got to tell you, this guy is a champion, an absolute champion. A bombshell Twitter files drop on Thursday. That was yesterday's show. Former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey and other top execs lied about shadow banning conservatives in his testimony before Congress in 2018. Shadow banning means a user account is being secretly throttled, hidden from other users without the platform notifying the user they've done it. So in other words, you go to your Twitter account and it looks perfectly normal, but no one else can access. No one else can get to it because they've shadow banned you, but you don't know it. That's the key. You don't know it. The evidence was presented on Twitter by journalist Barry Weiss as part of new owner Elon Musk's attempt to get to the bottom of the censorship taking place on the platform. Internal company files show employees, not algorithms, built blacklists and filtered content without a user's knowledge. Most notably, Weiss revealed a process behind closed doors using a system known as visibility filtering, which was for all intents and purposes a form of shadow banning. You know, there's a blame on it, ambiguity. This is a form of deception. You know, instead of calling it shadow ban, you call it visibility filtering, but obviously it has the same effect. Multiple high-level sources confirmed its meaning. Visibility filtering, or VF, was used to block searches of individual users, to limit the scope of a particular tweet's discoverability, to block select user posts from ever appearing on the trending page, and from inclusion in hashtag searches. Elon Musk also confirmed that the shadow banning rules were enforced against the right, but not against the left. High-level execs, including former CEO Jack Dorsey, had repeatedly denied the social media platform was engaged in any form of shadow banning, including testimony before Congress. Now, that represents a contempt of Congress. You think Congress is going to call these guys to account and bring charges against them? I have no doubt there's probably not even a statute of limitations on prosecution, but you can bet damn well the Democrats aren't going to punish those who are protecting the Democrats. And the Republicans are going to have the opportunity to raise hell about it. They're going to conduct investigations in the House, but it's already, look what Elon Musk is doing in getting all this out. Dorsey, for example, told the House Committee on Energy and Commerce on September 5th, 2018, that Twitter does not shadow ban anybody based on their political leaning, which was complete bullshit. Let me be clear about one important and foundational fact. Twitter does not use political ideology to make any decisions, whether related to ranking content on our service or how we enforce our rules. We do not shadow ban anyone based on political ideology. In fact, from a simple business perspective and to serve the public conversation, Twitter is incentivized to keep all voices on the platform. What horseshit! He kept up the defense in public statements. Prior to the aforementioned testimony, another Twitter exec, Kay Vaughn Beekpower, tweeted, "To be clear, our behavioral ranking doesn't make judgment based on political view or the substance of tweets." It's like the FBI, you know. Actually, they're just not answering the question about whether they'd infiltrate the crowd on January 6th. Of course they'd infiltrate the crowd. When they refuse to answer, that's because the answer is not what they want the public to know. The answer is not. Not only that, but it turns out that Bill Barr would have known what was going on, too. Representative Thomas Massie has pointed out and noted the new Twitter files dropped from Weiss. Clearly, human beings pulling the trigger on bans, blacklists, and filter content. When testifying before Congress, Jack Dorsey made it sound as if algorithms were to blame for bias, and that these algorithms were fixed. What we learned tonight is that people, actual human beings with undeniable bias, were and still are responsible for the bias filtering of voices. Dorsey also flat out denied shadow banning in response to a tweet by journalist David Rubin in October of 2020. "Do you shadow ban based on political beliefs?" asked Rubin. "Simple yes or no will do, Dorsey. No." Weiss's Twitter files reveal Dorsey was one of several high-ranking executives to participate in a site integrity policy escalation support group, which is where the biggest and most politically sensitive decisions were made. Before quoting a Twitter employee who said, "Think high follower account, controversial accounts for which there'd be no ticket or anything. This group, such as Libs of TikTok, tagged for review by SIPPES, that's that group, as they were called, tagged for further review and potential spam enforcement as a means of circumventing the safety team under enforcing their policies. In other words, if the safety team didn't suppress the tweets, the SIPPS board would be notified and try to work it out. Internal messages suggest Dorsey was on board with policies that suppress misinformation because limiting the spread virality of content is a good way to do that. But how the hell, who knows what is misinformation or not? Right? It's supposed to be misinformation to say that the COVID jab is causing massive death and devastation. But how can that be misinformation? If misinformation has to be false to qualify as misinformation, that claim is true. How about the FBI was involved, the Capitol Police, Nancy Pelosi, and orchestrated the January 6th event to smear Trump and his supporters, and that they deliberately edited Trump's speech at the ellipse where he said at the end, be peaceful, be peaceful. They edited it out when they opened it up. And then when Musk reveals, you know, puts Twitter back and restores Trump the first two tweets, which were the last before he was banned, we see, are telling everyone to be peaceful, to respect law and order. We're the party of law and order. I mean, the monstrous way in which the Democrats have gone about insulating the public from the truth, from evidence that would make a difference in order to manage the outcome to support a predetermined political position is just enormous and insulting. Here are some further thoughts. Bill Barr had to know the FBI was censoring conservatives before the 2020 election. When Grandpa Hairsniffer, that of course would be Joe Biden, was installed in the White House in January 2021, the Democrats hit the ground ready to gently embrace our necks with a steel-toed boot. They had a stack of executive orders ready for the dementia patient-in-chief to mark his ex on the very first day before shuffling him back to the basement. They had a plan, and they were ready to lead, despite the fact most Democrats were still in shock that they'd won the White House. What are Republicans in the House ready to do once they take control in January? They're promising to hold hearings where they quiz every Twitter employee who is involved in censoring American. Really? That's it? I could care less what anyone at Twitter was doing. We already know they were censoring Trump supporters. What I want is justice for those censored Americans. And that means holding the FBI agents and their leadership accountable for violating their oath of office. We now know, thanks to the release of the Twitter files, that FBI agents were holding weekly secret meetings with Twitter, Facebook, Google, and other big tech companies in the run-up to the 2020 election. Those meetings dealt with censoring content that would harm Joe Biden's chances in the 2020 election. The government did this, and it's the clearest violation of civil liberties of Americans you could possibly get. Remember, the First Amendment is a constraint on the government. The First Amendment says a government cannot violate your freedom of speech, your freedom of publication, your freedom of assembly, your freedom of religion. The government cannot violate. But in this case, they're turning Twitter, Facebook agent, Google, and I dare say Amazon.com into agents of the government. I'm going after Amazon. What they're doing here are clear, blatant violations of our First Amendment right because they're becoming instruments of government suppression of speech. Every FBI agent takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. In fact, all federal and state are required under Article 6 to take an oath swearing to uphold the Constitution. That includes all officers in the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. When it comes to the Bill of Rights, all officers are required to err on the side of individual Americans. They're not supposed to be colluding with a private company to violate our free speech rights. I don't care about the Twitter employees because they've all been fired. And it's not like there's a plethora of jobs available for them in the Bay Area right now, thanks to mass immigration under the scam. They're being punished plenty for their role in this by being fired in a city where their rent is $7,000 a month for a crummy apartment. Best of luck, losers. But with the FBI agents, it's different. It's clearly and blatantly illegal for FBI agents to work with companies to censor us. Even if you think Trump was a bad president, that still doesn't authorize FBI agents to suspend the Constitution and rig an election. There's no excuse for that. Former National Security Advisor Kash Patel is bringing up a great point. FBI Director Christopher Wray had to know his agents were holding weekly meetings with Google, Facebook, and Twitter to censor Americans. Attorney General Bill Barr, who is Christopher Wray's boss, also had to know about it. These guys are rotten and corrupt to the core. Instead of defending your right to free speech, they colluded with our political enemies to take our rights away. That shouldn't just be a firing offense. It should be a you go to jail now offense. It should be a you are now permanently losing your security clearance offense. And you can never hold a federal or state job in America ever again offense. Let me just add, by the way, now, as a note before I bring in my very special guest for today, the death of two figures whom I regard as heroic, one in the area of JFK, the other in the area of 9/11. Speaking of David Lifton, in the first instance, who died on Monday, Lifton published a book called Best Evidence back in 1980 that I regard as the single most important book published in the history of research on the assassination. Lifton made all kinds of brilliant points, including that there was a difference in the description of the skull from the Parkland physicians, who described it as a fist-sized blowout at the back of the head, in juxtaposition with a Parkland autopsy report, which describes it as a massive hole back of the head, well up into the top of the head, missing part. You can find it described in mathematical detail in the Bethesda autopsy report, which I included in an appendix in my first collection of expert studies, Assassination Science. And he read it to a physician without identifying the patient and said, "What does this sound like to you?" And he said, "It sounds as though he's hitting the back of the head with an axe." Well, it would turn out that, in fact, Commander James Humes, who was in charge of the autopsy, actually took a cranial saw to the skull of the JFK and enlarged the wound to make it look more like something that could have been caused by a shot fired from behind if JFK had been leaning over and well forward. How stunning is that? But he did it in front of two witnesses, one of whom was Thomas Evan Robinson, who was a funeral director to prepare the body for her burial, who, when he was asked by members of the Assassination Record Review Board about this diagram with dotted lines, blah, 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 and he said, "Oh, no, the doctors did that." How stunning is that? It was also Lifton who was among the first to sense that there was something wrong with his Zapruder film. We know now, not only was the Secret Service complicit, but the limousine was brought to a halt after JFK had been shot twice, once in the back and once in the throat, but he was still alive. William Greer, the driver, brought the vehicle to a halt, jostling all the passengers forward. And during that stop, which now I calculate to have lasted around 20 seconds, he was hit three times in the head. Once in the back of the head, slumped forward, Jack eased him back up, was looking him right in the face when he was hit the right temple, but perhaps simultaneously on the right side by a shot fired from the right front and from the side. David Bantick, the leading expert on the medical evidence, believes now there was his third shot to the head, killing him, and he slumped to the left. You don't see any of that in the film. And there are people out there today like Robert Grote and Josiah Thompson, the men you think are heroes of the JFK community, who are lying to the public. They know better. They attack those of us who have exposed the massive editing of the film. My God, they're doing a report now where they're not even explaining how we've confirmed that Lee Oswald was in the doorway when the motorcade passed by, which means not only can he have not been the lone demented gunman, but he cannot have been one of the shooters, and we've now identified eight different shooters, Donnie. Check out my stuff. If you go to my Mitchell channel, Jim Fetzer, check out my reports on JFK, and you'll learn a mass of details, or my most recent book, JFK, Who, How, and Why, which has contributions from some 17 experts. I think you'll like it. The other figure who has departed this earth this week is David Ray Griffin, who is the dean of 9/11 studies. He was a wonderful guy. Practically nobody knows that David Ray Griffin, before he published his book, The New Pearl Harbor, reached out to me and suggested we do a co-authored book. I do the part on JFK and he do the part on 9/11. And at the time, I was not really familiar with David. And I hesitated. And he went ahead and published the new Pearl Harbor, which became, I think, the seminal work in relation to JFK's studies. I would subsequently actually found Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, bring together experts from all over the world, hundreds of experts. I'd invited David to be my co-chair at the time, but he declined and suggested Stephen Jones, a BYU physicist, whom I invited then to become my co-chair. Later, 6 or 8 months later anyway, David would explain to me that he hadn't thought founding a society would make a difference. But indeed, it took off like a rocket. And I had hundreds of members from all over the world, created a website. You can find the message at 911scholars.org. If you want to see more of our enduring work, go to 911scholars.ning.com, and you can find a whole lot of very important studies. He published as many as 20 books on 9/11, and I honor and revere him. He was there. He did it. He made it happen. A great man and a contributor to truth.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. first insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, my guest, whom I intended to bring on at this point in time, is in the Far East and seems to have had a difficulty connecting. He was there with Mitchell. I could even hear him in the background and actually asked him to mute. I'm hoping he will be able to reconnect. Meanwhile, on December 7th, just a few days ago, Ron Johnson hosted a forum on COVID at the Senate Hart Building with high-level truth-telling professionals from multiple disciplines, medical health professionals, research science, actuarial data experts, those injured by COVID injections. I'm going to play the clips. This is just 10 minutes of the highlights, and we'll go from there. Mitchell, if you could, my friend, please. Mitchell, can you play it? Well, let me try a variation on the theme. Perhaps I can play it myself. Here we go. Let's see if this will work.
The main reason for this event today was, first of all, to provide information that the American public deserves to know, but they're not being told, but anything we could do to prevent further harm. I don't want to scare the you-know-what out of people. None of us do, okay? But they need to have that information.
V-Safe is the CDC's premier vaccine safety system for the COVID-19 vaccine. This is a dashboard that I can create to be able to visually represent the V-Safe data. About 800,000 people reported needing medical care in the database of 9 to 10 million. That's about 7.7% of people in V-Safe reported needing medical care. That is 1 in 13 people. yet the CDC did not pull the shot.
In January 2021, I came before you as a military whistleblower reporting catastrophic increases in illnesses and injuries across the DOD. The total number of reportable events went from 110,000 in 2020 to over 200,000 in 2022. The vaccine was introduced into the military in January of 2021.
It generated hundreds and hundreds of charts, looked at this every way from Sunday. The UK government, until this summer, was reporting a data series that showed the relative mortality rates for the vaccinated and unvaccinated by the number of doses of the vaccine. Simplifies down to a conclusion that says that through the last available data set, the people in the UK who took the vaccine have a 26% higher mortality rate.
This is the Society of Actuaries. In 2021, in ages 25 through 64, the employed people of our nation covered under group life, they experienced a 40% excess mortality. 1.2 million additional Americans in the employed segment of our population left the workforce, or get this, didn't leave the workforce, they got disabled. That is the size of the state of Wyoming and Vermont combined that disappeared from the labor force.
As a journalist, I looked at the emergency use authorization for the vaccine and wanted to see had they achieved the stopping transmission, which is our definition of a vaccine. But when we looked at the emergency use authorization, what was known was that the data are not there, limited to assess the effects of the vaccine against transmission of SARS-CoV-2. They had no idea. They had no idea if it would stop the infection, yet they were making those statements on the news. And now we find out from the heads of Pfizer that they were never even testing inside the trials whether or not it could stop transmission.
In January 2020, I was working as the senior advisor to the FDA commissioner on drug safety and FDA science policy. I don't understand how in good conscience we can still be giving these vaccines at this point for the COVID-19, named after 2019, for a strain of the vaccine that no longer exists. This spike protein, when we inject this gene into the body and start hijacking your cells to make it, these natural killer cells now look at your own cells, they poke a little hole in those cells, and then they throw a little hand grenade in and start blowing them up. It's not just that this spike protein is dangerous. The lipid nanoparticle will go anywhere into the body. It was designed to carry chemotherapeutic agents to the brain. You don't want spike protein in your brain.
We now have data from multiple sources that the spike protein, which the current mRNA vaccine products ask the body to make, are cardiotoxic and cause the heart to be inflamed. The spike protein sets in motion a cascade of events that activates platelets to form clots and inflames the blood vessel lining the heart and the heart muscle itself.
What I'm seeing clinically is now patients have taken the vaccine and they've had COVID and they've taken the vaccine and now it's all mixed and there's multiple exposures. The more exposures there are, in my estimation, there's greater risks of myocarditis and recurrent myocarditis and blood clots and more blood clots. And the FDA and the manufacturers strictly excluded COVID-recovered patients from the clinical trials because of that fact.
I've seen three strokes, transient ischemic attacks, massive clot to the spleen and liver, spinal tumors, brain tumors, sarcoidosis, lupus, cognitive impairment, myocarditis, pericarditis, and I see a shocking suppression of the immune system that is pervasive.
My patients are women of reproductive age,
Steve, I'm doing my
pregnant
show.
Women,
you okay?
And preborn babies. And what I've seen in my clinical practice has been a substantial, massive increase, unprecedented, in menstrual abnormalities prior to pregnancy, a substantial increase in infertility, a substantial increase in miscarriage, fetal death, and fetal malformation. And what we see is catastrophic. It's a danger signal like no others.
There is significant variance in the toxicity from lot to lot, such as the lot that I received with my second dose that almost killed me as I developed hypertension with systolic to 230. That there's some reason why some loss are associated with many more deaths and much more disease than others.
My life before my vaccine is beautiful. Sorry, it's hard to remember the worst parts of my life. I participated in the clinical trial for AstraZeneca, and now I suffer from a severe debilitating form of neuropathy that will progress until I'm essentially left in a care home.
I received my one and only Moderna injection December 30th of 2022. Within 1 week after my Moderna shot, I began to have numbness and weakness in my legs. I quickly received the diagnosis of transverse myelitis. This involves an injury to my thoracic spinal cord. I am now permanently disabled. If you have an adverse event after your shot, you are on your own. They are currently enrolling 50 different clinical trials on other new mRNA vaccines. This product, which we've all agreed are inadequate, are now being grandfathered and essentially enabling a functional monopoly for Pfizer, Moderna, and BioNTech to deploy this technology for virtually any purpose.
There are plenty of drugs that have been shown to have antiviral properties, and they were very quickly identified around the world and widely used, not in this country.
About 40% of drugs, 40% of drugs used in hospitals are used off-label. That's fine if you're treating heart disease, but suddenly if it's coronavirus, that FDA, the CDC, the NIH do not want you to use an off-label drug because it would compete with big pharma.
I want to ask why the Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, why the American College of OBGYN, and why the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, all of whom I've served in a professional capacity in an outstanding fashion my entire career, why they are pushing this lethal vaccine, risking the future of all humanity.
Other nations have banned this product because it's too dangerous for younger people. What are we doing?
I'm passionate for the health of our children. I'm also passionate for young service members that I served for 13 years in the Air Force as a flight surgeon deployed to Iraq. For our healthy children and the majority of our war fighters, the data show that the risk for myocarditis is greater than the benefit of the vaccine products. As a physician who has vowed to do no harm, my opinion is that we should not mandate harm.
I can't believe that the FDA, where I worked as a career medical officer, I'm the only person who's out of the 20,000 employees or so at the FDA of physicians, pharmacists, nurses, public health officials that's here speaking out about this. I don't understand.
It's an outrage, a moral, ethical, medical outrage.
All the vaccine mandates should be dropped immediately. We need requests for applications and immediate funding for vaccine injury centers of excellence across the United States for screening, detection, diagnosis, prognosis, and management. We need a massive shift in our healthcare system towards managing now this large number of vaccine injured people.
It is absolutely irresponsible to continue any of these shots in our reproductive age kids or younger. Anybody that could possibly pass these on without investigating this, and I am demanding now that this be investigated.
Well, let me say, that's sensational, and it's available on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Meanwhile, my special guest, we are connected. He is in the Far East. He's had trouble making the connection. His name is Luke McKee. He's been outing politicians who are engaged in pedophilia and sex trafficking in Australia, New Zealand, at great hazard to his own well-being. He's effectively been banned from those areas down under in order to save his own life. He has a great deal to say, but anticipate we may find ourselves interrupted at more than once. Luke, join the conversation. I'm so glad to have you here.
Well, yes, so glad to be with you this time on your turf instead of doing interviews on my BitChute channel. It's been a long battle, and a lot of the things we've talked about over the years has led to our vindication. So, yeah, I better introduce myself. As you know, my name's Luke McKee, and I'm wanted for the rarest crime in Australia, which is Section 60C of the New South Wales Crimes Act. Crime of obtaining true personal information on a law enforcement officer. They always try out the most draconian new laws in Australia, but I believe America since copied this law, and there was a case of Free Barrett Brown, a journalist who was investigating a hacking incident, and today we'll be talking about a hacking incident too, the Medicare hack in Australia, and evidence that's come to my attention that points to it being a false flag psychological operation against Russia. It's basically it could be an own goal. So we'll be getting into that later. But so 60C is a crime of investigating corrupt police. And Senator Lee Rhiannon, who's no longer a senator, said at the law's inception in the police and other law enforcement officers bill of 2002, the only bill on the New South Wales Parliament homepage to have the full Hansard censored. Hansard is like your C-SPAN or the political record of who's saying what when in Parliament, censored, and an extract document put in its place. The person that ran the malicious prosecution against me for the crime of uncovering a massive scandal of police a large number of police, perverting the course of justice, giving visas to illegal immigrants for profit to aid the sex industry, brothels. So that's how it all started in 2007. I was wheels up on Australia on the 2nd of November 2007, and I was seen off by three LE marked, that means Leichhardt, my local police district, police cars at Sydney International Airport. And then those same detectives swore under oath I was still in the country because I'd used a little bit of spycraft, and I said all my police corruption files are in my house and made fake frantic calls to go have them picked up. Well, the police took the bait, and I got the search warrant with the 60C New South Wales Crimes Act written on it, with them swearing under oath I'm in the country and a whole bunch of other lies. So everyone accused of this law before me, from the intelligence I have received from New South Wales Corrective Services and the New South Wales Bureau of Criminal Statistics and Research, is a death in custody. So no case law, 100% conviction rate, and crime of investigating corrupt police. And at the law's inception, politicians thought the law would be used in this way to come after people who know too much about police corruption. So Catherine Judith Burns ran the prosecution. I had forensic evidence to prove that. Now she is the Deputy Director General of the Australian Security Intelligence Service, Australia's CIA. And I'm involved in basically battle with the top of Australia's intelligence services. I can bring her down, and I have just published on my Twitter account forensic evidence linking her to three protected pedophile individuals. My Twitter account is a good test for Elon Musk. It is already shadow banned in the search, according to shadowban.eu. The Twitter account is end, as in to stop, the, as in the article in the English grammar, ZB, for Zulu Bravo, 951, and the word visa, V-I-S-A. That's the visa. That's where the New South Wales police can overrule immigration to keep illegal immigrants in the country. Since 2006, the Department of Home Affairs, formerly known as the Department of Immigration, has refused multiple FOIs to get the statistics for this secret, state secret visa category. By the Migration Act and the law, the government must disclose the number of visas given in all categories. They do not for this visa, because I believe in 2006 there would be a large spike in the number of these visas being issued. because according to the Australian Institute of Criminology, 50% of all sex workers are on student visas. And in I had the misfortune of not doing domestic violence, say again, not doing domestic violence, and not spying on an ex. I'm happily married now with a wife and two kids and a family. I'm not interested in her in any way except her being a witness against corrupt police. But I was almost framed in 2007, and I won my case, two counts of assault. It was a frame job. Basically, she broke in the front windows of my house, and I won in court, put an ABO on her, got her banned from Australia for 5 years. Well, on the day I was framed up, she solicited sex. And I wasn't in the mood because my brother just died, Tasman McKee. And that was actually a very good thing in hindsight, because I believe she was going for a rape victim, a rape accusation. It was never made, but I think that was the plan. So she could get a criminal justice stay visa to keep working in 64 Alexandria Ave, Tarrant Point, under the working name Nina. Halfway through my court case, I did a surprise move to move back into my apartment, and I found her handwriting on an Australian Chinese daily newspaper ad, and a Chinese friend called up the number she wrote down next to it, and it was a brothel. So 50% of all the sex workers in 2006 and 7 had their visas cancelled when the immigration minister, Amanda Vanstone, launched the electronic confirmation of enrolment system, now called COE, which links all the immigration computer systems to all the universities' computer systems to track foreign students and compliance. My ex told me she could work full-time for a year without attending university on a student visa, which of course is a lie. I have a letter from her parents that she scanned 2 days before. Actually, she downloaded the letter as I was actually just making false allegations against me when I was at work on CCTV. And the letter was from her parents. They scanned her invite for the Sydney University degree presentation that she never told me about. So she told Sydney University she's in Hong Kong. She told immigration she's at Sydney University. And she told me she could work full time. I thought she was standing on street corners collecting money for Save the Children and Oxfam Community Aid Abroad with the job that Sydney University International Student Services gave her. But obviously she was taking her uniform off once she got to the brothel. So I have all this forensic evidence to prove that there's police running corrupt. The arresting officer in my case, Tui Ormsby, ran the New South Wales Police communist Weibo messenger account for foreign students to talk in Chinese. So I believe there will be a massive spike in ZB951 visas given. Also, I found out, now this criminal justice stay visa normally ends with deportation from Australia, but I found access, Google snuck into the migration agent only website, www.ecom.ini.gov.au, and found out special rulings were being made to let people who had framed people up, you know, made false rape allegations, switch to a marriage visa. And in my case, I was threatened with a 60C prosecution by the other guy that she had lined up to marry. Now, I'm not jealous of him, for God's sake. I wouldn't want to marry a sex worker. I think he must have done it for money, you know. That's how these things work with you know, people getting into the country with fake marriages. So, yeah, I have an orgy of forensic evidence about my case, but I'm going to drop talking about my case if you have any questions and focus this whole talk today on what my enemies have been up to recently.
Well, Luke, that's going to work. We'll have a break here in just about 3 minutes, so you can give a summary overview, and after the break, then we'll go to the the other aspects here. But you'll hear the music in the background. Go ahead, add a few more minutes, please.
Okay, so where we're at now is I've been overseas for 16 years in exile. And obviously, with everyone being accused of 60C before me, disappearing off the face of this earth, and also the other thing I've been exposing is the anti-discrimination hate speech industry. All the hate speech laws have been pinned on a brain-damaged Christian man called John Christopher Sunhol, S-U-N-O-L, and he's being used as a vessel to frame up with hate speech charges. Because he's brain-damaged, he can't defend himself properly, and they've been using him to create all the case law precedents for all the hate speech in Australia. But, he's been found guilty of Canberra Times, blogger ordered to remove hate speech against small religious order. He's taken the fall for what I put on his blog, on a Google blog using my own Google account. And the court said John Sunhol owns blogspot.com, and he is the publisher, not Google, and found him guilty for me criticising the Ordo Templi Orientis. I have the leaked training videos of the global head of the Ordo Templi Orientis in America, David Shriven, who I've doxed on my Telegram group, Deep State Pedo, P-E-D-O, Hunters. And he is saying on leaked training videos that they drink human blood and two real children must join the Gnostic with a G, Catholic Mass, Black Mass orgy ritual. I have photographs of senior OTO leaders standing next to naked priestesses and young children. And you can, if you click on the spoiler tab on the breached VC links that you can see from my Twitter account, you can actually see that photo right now. It's not child abuse material, I don't think, because the children are wearing clothes, but it shows you that this cult is a pedophile cult in Australia. If you disrespect this satanic cult that's linked to Hillary Clinton via spirit cooking. Spirit cooking is the cakes of light, blood drinking ritual of the Ordo Templi Orientis. You will be sent directly to jail without the right to go to court. Age newspaper, couple jailed for contempt in vilification case.
Take a deep breath, Luke. We'll be right back with Luke McKee.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the issues that Luke McKee is dealing with, of course, are rather sordid. I have done an expose on Pizzagate you can find in two different locations. One is on my blog. If you look for, go to jameshfetzer.org, go to the 65 shows, and you scroll down and you'll find it fairly rapidly. But I've also put it up on my Twitter account, at Jim Fetzer. So if you go to at Jim Fetzer on Twitter, you can scroll down and you'll find the Pizzagate revelation, which complements what Luke has explained to us here. Proceed, Luke, with your story.
Hello.
Go for it.
Okay, I'm back on again. Yeah, I just heard your ad in the break about Amazon, and I'd like to stick the knife into them a little bit. There was a website that's been seized by your government called, I think it was Z-Lib, and they put onto Google something I found which was very useful. I went to Sydney's most elite school, Sydney Grammar, and I went there with a case law, a police confirmed convicted pedophile who took me into the bush on a Sydney Grammar School Endeavour Club expedition. And abused me. But guess what? On Zlib, run by Amazon, there was a book by an ABC journalist, which I wouldn't have found otherwise because Amazon doesn't allow you to Google the contents of the books like Zlib.it, Zlib-org used to, which was run by hackers that hacked Amazon and stole their books. And the book was called Malcolm Turnbull, Australia's Former Prime Minister, Born to Rule. And in that book, it says that Malcolm Turnbull was raised by Adrian Cooper, OAN, who got Order of Australia whilst being a convicted pedophile. All my research notes are online at tinyurl.com/ASIOPEDOS. And there's an individual in ASIO who dedicates all of his books to this convicted pedophile. And I put the screenshots from that book on my first post on the breach.vc forums about the Medibank hack. So, you know, information needs to be free. And I hope the world's
Amazon's books get hauled back onto Google again in the near future so people can use the information in them.
Persevere, my friend.
Okay, so let's get on to the meat and potatoes now about Medibank, okay? So Australia and Russia are having a big spat now, as we've talked about before on our previous shows, regarding Ukraine. Now, we also did a show in 2016 about Deputy Commissioner Catherine Burns, and the new, before she moved over to ASIO from the head of New South Wales Police Counterterrorism, and how there was some pre-staging for the Sydney Lynch siege. Just tonight, I found out something new about that terror attack in Martin Place, where an Iranian man, who was a wind-up toy, held an ISIS flag at a Jewish-owned coffee-slash-chocolate store. Well, he was actually out on bail for rape and other offences, okay? And Catherine Burns was on Channel 10 TV, as we saw, telling the hostages to stay in the kill zone before the police snipers went in and killed two people. The most of them snuck out when the single hostage taker fell asleep. So this hostage taker, Man Morris, was on bail for rape and other offences, and his lawyer was Adam Hooter. Adam Hooter was the protege of Christopher Murphy, and Murphy's Law is his law firm. And Christopher Murphy is a police stooge and police asset that has pled people guilty against their will. I speak of the case of my friend Tarek Nassar, T-A-R-E-K, N-A-S-S-R. He was a security guard trying to go to work at Sydney Star City Casino, and he was stopped by police and arrested, and for no reason. And he had a CCTV alibi, and that alibi, once he got it, proved that 16 police gave false briefs of evidence, i.e. perverting the course of justice, the same crime that I alleged police were doing in Australia to give visas for profit. And Christopher Murphy's brother, who doesn't have a law licence, sneaks into court after the hearing date is changed to plead him guilty against his will. Of course, he appealed and got the charges dismissed on that, but there was never a hearing where the police could get bench warrants for their perjury. So that was the lawyer that was managing the guy, Man Morris, in the Sydney siege, and his website and what he was saying was never introduced into the inquiry. So that's one thing that we vindicated. The other thing we vindicated in the past is we did a talk about an ABC journalist called Michael O'Brien, real name, fake name, Michael James ABC or Michael James underscore TV on Twitter. 60%, like 45% of all the ABC staff from the Medicare hack use a nom de plume or a fake name when they work for the state broadcaster. That just screams credibility, doesn't it? The state broadcaster giving all these journalists fake names that they don't have on their driver's license. Anyway, so what happened since we've done that show is I've only got one thing inaccurate. I was wrong about the victim. It wasn't his foster son that he took on a tour to America when he first got him in an RV all around Silicon Valley. It was a boy, Kyron Reed, from St. Joseph's Nudgee Christian School. And he was going on SBS and other shows. I'm the poor gay teacher that got fired from a Catholic school. I've been discriminated against. But there was a child rape trial in, I think, 2016, just before the gay marriage, big gay marriage vote in Australia. And new case law has come out from a judge, QCAT 2021-54, Health Ombudsman versus Gillespie. Spouse in that case law is Michael O'Brien, and Anthony Gillespie is the respondent. But like all AB people linked to the ABC and pedophilia in public life, he didn't use his real first name, Donald. Anyway, so that case shows that the Queensland Police withheld the use of date rape drugs in a child rape trial, which is perverting the course of justice, because the Australian government decided, for the sake of gay marriage, a paedophile must get away with sodomising a child. So therefore, the Australian government has formally declared that gay marriage and child abuse are linked, and gay marriage justifies child abuse. So this is very serious, this case. BernardGaynor.com.au was in the court, and the judge said in the court also, we don't have jurisdiction to talk about some of the rapes that happened to Kyron Reed in Bali, but Australia's had laws on the books saying we had jurisdiction for overseas child sexual tourism since 1986, and there's a report page for overseas child sexual tourism on the Australian Federal Police homepage. So we're looking at a high-level cover-up. And that, and also on top of that, I reported all everything I just told you before the case law decision came out to his principal, Tracy Brouse, who was on 60 Minutes Australia for suing a whole bunch of homophobic parents. Michael O'Brien ran her GoFundMe to pay her off, and that's why she did the crime of breaking mandatory reporting laws and not telling my police when I sent her a dossier on her staff member. You can see all the information about this on the breached VC links that I put on my Twitter account and the VB951 visa. So that's just a recap of all of us being vindicated in the past with our previous activism. And let's talk about Medibank. Are you ready for that?
Go for it.
Okay. So, as you know, I'm very interested in foreign students in Australia because the industry, Australia loves brothels, okay? During the lockdown, in Dictator Dan, the Premier of Victoria, had said if you travel to see your grandparents during the lockdown, you will be arrested. But the Victorian government said brothels must remain open. That is not a joke. That actually happened. So that's how much the Australian, corrupt Australian government loves its overseas foreign student sex workers. So I've got all their medical data now, and I can use that to identify who are getting the regular STD checks who are probably sex workers, then work backwards from that to find the other men who are framed up with rape when they all have their visas cancelled. So that's why I downloaded the Medibank data. I'm using it for lawful purposes, to support my asylum application and investigate corruption. But the Prime Minister of Australia said, if I do that, they're going to come and get me. So I wish them luck with that. So the Medibank was hacked by the first stage of the Medicare hack was a senior IT administrator had their credentials of Medibank, had their credentials leaked on the sold on the dark web for money, and then that was used by the ransomware gang. 10 months ago, Putin launched, and the FSB launched a massive raid to arrest everyone they could find in the R-Evil ransomware gang. Yet the Australian government has not cooperated with Russia whatsoever and contacted them for the last 3 weeks, according to the Russian embassy's press release about the Medibank hack. The Australian government just seized the land for Russia's new embassy because they don't want them to have an embassy that's bug-proof. And the Russian government is now suing Australia. So there's lots of animosity between these two states. Catherine Burns, as you know, she's famous for pre-staging events. I was saying that she was ASIS for the last 2 or 3 years. As you know, you can recall in our old interviews. Well, I've made her come out of the closet as Australia's top spy. Normally, the people in charge of ASIS are pretty secret. And in May last year, she said, our next big focus is cyber attacks. Now, I don't know. I can actually believe that the intelligence services are so short-staffed, they would actually use an individual who I will now name, Heidi Hendry. I've only outed about three or four people as intelligence and all my activism on my Telegram group, Deep State Pedo Hunters. One of them's David Bottrell, leader of the OTO. He's trying to jail Johnson Hole, and he's going into courts with gay activists now in the ACT. There's Catherine Burns, and there's another individual called Heidi Hendry. I'm going to talk about how I know she's intelligence in a second, but right now, Heidi Hendry is working for a contractor for Medibank, and she got the job about 2 months before the data of the credentials for the Medibank IT people were exfiltrated. Now, I work in IT. People are creatures of habits. So there's more speculation than I normally do here on this one, because we're talking about a false flag. I believe that she had the password was obtained from Atlassian. Atlassian is an Australian company that makes Confluence, Jira, and Trello, which are three systems which are used internally by Medibank. And usually IT people, I'm guilty of the same thing. I would use the same password on my internal systems and then trust vendors like Microsoft or, in this case, Atlassian, and use the same administrator password. So that is probably... Now, Heidi Hendry physically approached me in Vietnam in 2015, in January, around the 10th of January. The story was, I was working in an IT job in Hanoi, in Da Nang 2. And I kind of blew my cover working there, because the American ambassador, Ted Osis, America's gay ambassador to Vietnam, which organized a big junket called ASEAN Pride, where he flew transgenders or trannies from all over Southeast Asia to a local gay bar in Hanoi. And he's also famous for trying to buy a very, very sick baby with a birth defect in Indonesia called Septi. On his gay partner's blog, The Jakarta, The Journal, there's a blog post called Losing Septi, and it says how the Muslim government of Indonesia is homophobic for not letting American diplomats adopt brain damaged children. Oh, sorry, not brain damaged, critically injured, you know, birth defect, lots of problems. So, because how dare Muslims not let Americans buy their babies? And Russia just yesterday banned all foreigners from doing adoptions of any kind. So a bit late in that regard. I think they did it earlier too, when there was an Australian gay marriage activist, Mark J. Newton and Peter Trong, bought a Russian baby for $5,000, and they got the Australian government to break its own laws regarding the issuance of passports, and they gave a passport to a Russian-born baby to two Russian parents, to an Australian and American gay activist, without a DNA test. So when you move children around the world for the purposes of sex, it's fraudulent travel documents, that meets the UN definition of human trafficking. And my father used the internet from his hotel room in Hanoi to criticize them, these people who raped a two-week-old infant. And when he comes back to Australia, Gary Burns, the presumed brother of Deputy Commissioner Catherine Burns, sues my dad for homosexual vilification, because it's a hate speech laws to disrespect a homosexual. And they went on ABC TV and said the Russian police were homophobic for delaying their human trafficking. So there you go. It's not coming from me. The gays have formally said themselves, it's homophobia if you don't like human trafficking. Every single country in Southeast Asia, thanks to my activism. And I was investigating gays buying babies from Thailand long before the baby gamming affair. But nearly every country in Southeast Asia has banned this practice that I've been exposing as well. And I have all the names of all the customers of New Life IVF. CarrotFertility.com, ran by Tammy Sun, a Clinton Democrat Party, Clinton Foundation operative, says that all big tech Google employees can get a $200,000 gay paternity allowance to exploit an Asian woman to make a baby, and New Life IVF and British Surrogacy Center and all these human trafficking operations, say on their website, if you have AIDS, no problem. Give us your AIDS semen and you can make a gay pride's AIDS baby from your own seed. They've actually done this, and it came out in the baby gamming affair and the investigations into that. The surrogate didn't even know that the person had AIDS or that the baby was going to a gay man. So Australian government is involved in this whole-scale operation of human trafficking. And I got Tammy Davis Charles arrested in Cambodia for human trafficking. Cambodia for human trafficking. And she was involved with the same New Life IVF business in Thailand that sold baby gammy to a convicted pedophile. So sorry to go off topic. Let's go back to Medicare. So in 2005, I was making submissions to the New South Wales Parliamentary Inquiry into Operation Prospect and Deputy Commissioner Catherine Burns, illegal wiretapping of other police officers, to let them know that she's done some malicious prosecutions of me too, the 60C Crimes Act. I used my work email to submit the submission to the New South Wales Parliament. David Shoebridge, MP, who's now a federal senator, was on the committee. 4 days later, also David Bottrell, leader of the Auto Templi Orientis, sent an email to my employer threatening him because I accidentally snip a signature off one of my emails I cut and pasted onto my Facebook for a few seconds, and he found it, like the resourceful guy he is, because he's intelligent. According to case law, he's done operations overseas in Turkey. He's not really in immigration. That's just his cover. Catherine Burns allegedly went to immigration at first too, and we now know she's ACES. So I met the gay ambassador downstairs. So the gay mafia knew I was there in this IT job. So Heidi Hendry shows up for a job interview, and she's going to be my new boss. And I come into work before her first day, and my direct supervisor, Hugh Durren, who is a good bloke, left her resume on my desk because he couldn't warn me there was a plot against me. So it's all he could do for his friend. On that resume, it said Heidi Hendry was a UK, US, your country, and Australian citizen. But only a few years before, she stood for election in the Greens Party, and David Shoebridge slept over at her house, according to her Twitter account, and she was a gay activist. And I couldn't have a person like that being my boss, and it reeked of intelligence. So what I did is I pulled out my portable hard disk, and I booted my office computer into living.
I think we may have lost Luke again ever so briefly. He'll rejoin us momentarily. Meanwhile, as I've been explaining, this is very sordid stuff, but serious, and we need to come to grips. And I highly recommend you checking out my Pizzagate expose, which you can find both at jameshfetzer.org, the 65 shows, but also on my Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. Luke, go ahead.
Okay, so, yeah, I can't say 100% that Heidi Hendry is ACES, but I could probably say about, or ASIO, I could probably say 80%, 90% likely, based on the strange circumstances. Here I am, a political refugee in Vietnam, and David Shoebridge is a known enemy of me because he's going into court with Gary Byrne, the infant sex normalization activist who sues people for homosexually vilifying baby rapers like my father and John Sinhol. In fact, on the time that David Shoebridge went into court, John Sinhol was being prosecuted for linking to my blog. I blogged up about my arrest in California for 148A1 of the Californian Penal Code in 2005, delay or resist your own murder. I was arrested by Christopher Kent Bowersox, badge number 926. Christopher Kent Bowersox, it's a very old story, but basically I was arrested. They tried to arrest me for stealing my own car, and that didn't work. And I disobeyed the police officer when he put his hand on his gun belt and asked me to put my hands below the dashboard where he couldn't see them so he could lawfully shoot me dead. And I found out that he was going on documentingreality.com and getting high on hentai porn, child porn, and watching Chechen rebels cut off Russian soldiers' heads. Anyway, he got convicted for child porn, and I'm pretty much the only person in U.S. history to have their charges dismissed in the furtherance of justice without returning to the country. You can go to the Kern County Superior Court website and type in Luke, M-C-K-E-E, date of birth 1980. The public defender on the case that exonerated me was Peter Kang, and he's a legend, and he's moved off to the State Department now. So, yeah. So you've got this Heidi Hendry character coming into my work. She's a gay activist. She's sharing videos from the Greens talking about gay rights and stuff. I couldn't have this person near me. As I was saying before, I erased my work computer, not because there was anything on it. I feared that they would mix stuff on the work computer after I left, because to frame me up with something. So I left it with a clean slate, and I took the resume, and my father took a photograph of it, and it's on my Telegram group long before this potential ASIO operative got a job from Medibank Bank subcontractor. And, at the time, just when she got the job there, Catherine Burns is saying the next big thing that the intelligence is going to be obsessed with is cyber. So this whole thing looks like a false flag. Hugh Bono, the student newspapers in Australia for foreign students are saying, yay, all students who identify as homosexual can now claim that they're refugees and get permanent citizenship because of this Medibank hack, because people in their own country might be able to find out they're gay. I don't know how that's going to work for the Medibank data, but that's the kind of propaganda that's going to be going to the Australian Migration Review Tribunal, the MRT, soon. And the former head of the Anti-Discrimination Board, Christopher Footlick, who defends pedophiles, who's best mates with David Battelle, the former head of the Australian New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, who was obsessed with gay refugees, but really they were fake gay Muslim refugees, and he was raping them and blackmailing them, saying, if you don't have sex with me in my law office, I'll cancel your refugee visa. And he was best friends with John Dow, the head of ActionAid, and going to Bangladesh with him to meet all the little Bangladeshi boys. And then he was doing talks on conferences about anti-Semitism, talking about the perceptions of Bangladeshi teens and how they're, if they're anti-Semitic or not, whilst he was raping them. And he was also the first gay judge to use 47ZT of the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Act. And because of me, pridehistory.org.au removed him from their queer hero page. But they won't say sorry for saying the best gay is someone who abuses children and young adults. There was a film made about him based on my research that won awards in Germany called, I just put it on my Twitter account, Lawyer in a Devil's Suit, made by a Sydney lawyer, Mark Tarrant, who was threatened, I think, to take it down 2 years after it was put up because of my activism. So I just put the award-winning movie back online on my BitChute and my 153 News. So before the DMCA takedown, when the New South Wales police threatened this lawyer some more to do censorship, as they've done with every place I've published in the past, you guys can watch that award-winning film about the head of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies raping Muslims and see his victims. So, yeah, so back to Medibank. So I had this Heidi Hendry stalk me She was connected to David Shoebridge. David Shoebridge knew I was putting a submission in about Catherine Burns. I know Catherine Burns got a copy of the submission because in the cover letter for it, I was talking about how the New South Wales Police on Aussie Cop forums were saying there are designated safe places for gays to do public sex crimes called Beats. And Catherine Burns used to be on the website beatproject.org, which is a lobby page for gays to do public sex crimes outside in front of kids in children's parks. Yes, that actually exists. So she actually said the Sydney Town Hall train station public toilets are a gay beat zone and a police no-go zone. And when I used to go to Sydney Grammar as a kid, I used to commute for 1.5 hours from the South Coast. And as you know, sometimes after being on the train for 2 hours, you're human, you've got bodily functions, you've got to go to the toilet. And a couple of times in that toilet, some bloody gay turd burglars tried to break in and rape me. And now when the kids are going to Sydney Grammar, Catherine Burns and the New South Wales Police are telling the police this is a designated safe zone for pedophiles who are breaking into toilet cubicles to operate to try and rape school kids. So I put that on the cover letter for the submission to Parliament, and lo and behold, that post was censored off Aussie Cops and the police were prosecuted for talking about some of Catherine Burns' politically correct orders going down the pipeline. So I quit the job and I wouldn't go back there. And then the employer made a false allegation to the police that I had stolen a portable hard disk. It ended with them retracting that false allegation. And I have the SMSs and the voicemail of it, which I will be adding to the Breach to BC forum over the weekend. Now, this is very dangerous for me because normally I cannot shit, as you say in Australian slang, shit in your own nest. When you talk about things in your own jurisdiction, you can be attacked. So I have to choose my words very carefully next, okay? As you know, I believe ASIS is using child abuse blackmail. They are operating as child pimps at the very... Or they are using people who investigate pedophilia to, in the Asia Pacific region, to turn a blind eye to their duties, to compromise individuals of interest to the Australian and CIA intelligence apparatus to control them with blackmail. Catherine Burns' LinkedIn page, as I said before, is connected to James McKay, and he runs the Cambodian Child Protection Unit. And there's been 3 pedophiles which have been let go from his custody that was in Australia's interest to do so that eventually got nailed in Vietnam. Scott Ballardin is one, and Jaden Dong is another. Jaden Dong, he deliberately put out false information about that. Now, I'm not making any allegations of impropriety against my old boss and CEO, Pelle Nicholson. I think he's a nice guy. He gave me an opportunity to work for him. It was a hard time for me to focus on IT because I just had my dad just started being sued for homosexually vilifying a human trafficking child rapist who's in American jails now for 40 years, Mark J. Newton and Peter Trong. And I spoke to Mark Newton and Peter Trong's lawyer, and they say he doesn't identify as a pedophile, he identifies as a homosexual. Yes, I've published those emails from his lawyer. So, Heidi Hendry showed up at my work and went, she never quit her old job at UN International School. And when I wasn't there, she didn't want to take the job anymore. So they wanted to frame me up somehow. They went to plan B with me allegedly stealing a portable hard disk, which didn't happen and was retracted because they conveniently found it. And the only portable hard disk I took was my own one, which I used to boot my work computer into a Linux image from memory so it could keep running, erasing my computer after I left. All the data of the company that was important, of course, was on the corporate service. I just used my PC as a workstation like everyone else. And so I did that so I couldn't be framed. But one would expect, and the Australian government can't extradite me because I could prove Australia is a death penalty country because everyone accused of 60C before me is a death in custody. And you can't be extradited to a death penalty country. So the only way they can get me is by foul means. So I contacted Michael Fenter of the UNDSF Security Services, who at the time was in Vietnam, and said, hey, you've got an ASIO infiltrator working for UN International School. Her business was giving iPads to all the diplomats' children, the perfect plant for an Australian spy. Then after she was kicked out of UN International School, she goes to British International School doing the same thing, giving out iPads to all the diplomats' kids. Then, after that, she goes to Morocco. Same kind of operation again, same kind of job. Then after that, it's to a contractor that works for Medibank, providing their technology, which was used as the vehicle to start the hack. It's just too many coincidences. Jim, can you comment about the number of coincidences regarding this individual, Heidi Hendry? Also, as a result of the Medicare hack, the Australian government got the new terrorism laws they wanted. Now they can set up an offensive force to, quote, hack back the hackers. And if you're going to hack back hackers or hack foreign systems, the best way to hack a foreign system is to see the foreign system's source code and all internal documentation. And that is what the Atlassian company that makes Confluence, Jira and Twilio does. So I would say it goes without saying that company would be a prime target for intelligence services to infiltrate. Do you have any comments about what I've said or any questions so far, or can we open the phones up now for guests?
You go ahead. We can take calls if anyone would like to call in. While Luke is talking, 540-352-4452. But, Luke, I want you to continue because your story is so massive, sprawling, sordid, but significant.
Yeah, like I said, I don't want to be a prima donna, okay? My Telegram account, right, for the Telegram group Deep State Pedo Hunters got deleted, possibly because I didn't use it for 6 months and they made a new policy. This me being a political refugee fighting with Australian spies is depressing. I want to tune out sometimes. But also in Australia, I feel I have a duty to come out and maybe do. I don't think. I have tried for 16 years to try and fix Australia from within with activism, contacting people. Everyone is too afraid. Many of the top activists, sorry to say, are shills. You've got, who's that one who works for Rebel News in Australia? Avi Yemeni, okay? He goes to court to defend the Chabad cult that we talked about on our previous videos that have a doctrine of Netzitzar the Pair. His own brother, he changed his own name because his own brother, Manny Wax, W-A-K-S, was raped by the cult. And his own father and brother were disowned by the cult because they spoke about child abuse, and they won a $1 million settlement in the courts for the child abuse of that cult. And this cult has a doctrine, as we talked about in our previous show, Netzitzar Beper in Hebrew. Netzitzar means to suck in Hebrew, and Beper means by mouth in Hebrew. And the head rabbi in America, during the start of the COVID pandemic, said Listerine cures COVID and kills the virus. Therefore, if the rabbi puts Listerine in his mouth, he can bend down and orally suck the sex organ of a child. That is what's happening in your country. And Mayor Gabe Groisman of Bal Harbour in Florida, when I called up about him being in that cult, the Shul Bal Harbour, that has a doctrine of doing this, he said, if you don't like sucking children's penises, you are, or those who do, you are an anti-Semite who must be crushed.
Yeah, that's, wow. Hey, I'm Mitch, Jim's producer. How you doing?
No.
Man, I'm telling you, that is, that's some sick stuff. And, you know, we have sure, that yeah. child.
Have you taken me off air?
Pardon me?
Sorry, have you taken me off air at this time? Because I've been too far. Oh, sorry.
Well, Jim had to drop off for a second. I don't know why. Maybe he lost power or had to take another call or something. He normally, you know, it's really strange. But we've had problems with connection today. So I'm sure okay. He'll be right back. What, you know, this, here's Jim. This is, worldwide, isn't it?
My computer was shut down, Mitchell.
Okay.
Shut down. If Luke can finish his conversation, that would be wonderful.
Okay. So, yeah, things are very crazy in the world right now. I was talking about shields in Australia. RVMNE is one. When I called up Alex Jones in the past with a relevant call, they even had hold music to play to me saying, we're not letting you on our show. They even made like a pre-recorded thing, a pre-recorded skit to tell you to get stuffed. And I have an MP3 of that. We all know Alex Jones was in the Stratfor hack in the past as an intelligence operative. Now, I'm sorry, if he wants to let me hijack his platform and talk about the issue that's going on in Australia. I mean, some of his content is good. He's putting on people who seem to be very reasonable, exposing the COVID vaccine from Australia, like this Zoe character who was on TV on his show the other day. He is entertaining, but in the kind of high-level stuff I expose, there are lots of limited hangouts. I love the Aussie Cossack in Australia and his content. It's almost like he's aware of what I'm doing, but can't give me any publicity because he's exposing ASIO for being politically correct and right now. But he banned me from his forums for talking the truth about my dad being prosecuted for being critical of the Australian government human trafficking Russian babies and then allowing the pedophiles to go on ABC radio and call the Russian police homophobic, end quote. That was on the Gender on the Agenda sketch on ABC Far North Radio from Mark Newton and Peter Chong, who are, you can look up right now on the American BOP.gov inmate finder. So does anyone have any questions? So I think Heidi Hendry is an intelligence operative based on her career and the fact that she only came to my employment for me, and her resume said she was a US citizen and UK citizen and Australian citizen, which you can see if you use the search function, if you install the Telegram app and go to t.me/deepstatepedohunters, you can see long before she got the job in Medicare, a Medicare contractor, I was outing her as an ASIO operative, and I think it was very, very poor operational security for the intelligence services to reuse her. Now, you get a 10-year jail charge in Australia if you're out Australian spies, but I was never privy to any official documentation that she was a spy, so it would be very hard for the Australian government to charge me for outing an intelligence officer, because it's not proven that she is, but based on all the coincidences stacked on top of each other, she either came to me because she was a political asset of the Greens Party that was doing some overseas espionage against me, because like I said, she was sleeping over at David Shoebridge's house, and David Shoebridge was aware where I worked because I made a submission to his parliamentary inquiry. Just before she showed up. And you can see that submission, the public part of it, at tinyurl.com/prospect submission. Okay, into Catherine Burns. I have put audio of myself doing battle with my second phone call with Catherine Burns that I made with her in 2009. And I have other phone calls from around the same time when I did social engineering to prove.
I think we lost Luke again, but he'll be back momentarily. He's been very good at reconnecting. I've been very happy that even though he's been, you know, we've lost him because he's in Vietnam, that he's able to regain access here. And I got to say, I'll be putting up, the show on my BitChute channel, but you'll also be able to get the whole, from Revolution Radio, from the archives there. Go ahead, Luke, go ahead.
Okay. Missions are for that is corrupt. It's been missing years. Against that is awesome. I can't say it probably get that G communications with data orbit. Say intelligence service. This that's 2010 on stop the electrical from powers that from Hong Kong Christian Action a help for refugee. The only place of the 287. So it's huge. All the other huge. The refugee. Yeah. This. On top, park alone. And you don't have sex. And all acting. And I saw that. Yeah. Five for Hong Kong. So I believe that. And I I believe that she was she had no work experience, and she got a job for this car. College test that people interviewed. But the work there, the resume, she knows that was a for that they're selling helps you process. I'm up for the map. It's a minute to invited me down because I didn't take the law with the question my camera. See, I had no idea what was going on at the beginning. I real time on the that on the that to point head to do censorship, and that nothing stops it. But I could print out it, CDs and ten. Yeah, I'm a real political refugee from Australia. I don't want to be in the same league as Snowden and Assange, but I am. All I hope is that the Russian embassy puts a good word in for me, so the Australian government can't mess with my status overseas now, because of the work I'm doing to expose Australian government corruption and Australian government false flags. So with this Medibank hack, the newspaper, the fake mainstream media, is telling all the people, your privacy was violated by the Russians. It was the Russians that raped you. Support the war in Ukraine. Escalate the violence. Keep sending, don't mind when we send Australian soldiers with manpad and javelin training into Ukraine who take off their badges, okay? Because in Australia, for example, when there was the war with Lebanon and Hezbollah and the Jews, because the Israel is a country, is a country, Australians can go overseas and fight for a foreign army of a country, right? So the Ukraine Foreign Legion, or the Green Card Army of Ukraine, they represent a state. So it's lawful for Australian citizens to go over and fight for them. So when there was that conflict in the past, the Jews were all allowed to go and join the IDF, but Catherine Burns would be hunting down all the Muslims that thought they had the same right to defend their homeland as the Jews. Because there's one law for the Jew and another law for someone else. Same thing in America. When I was investigating Heidi Hendry, I found out that the American Supreme Court has said, if you voted in a foreign government's election, you lose your citizenship. That was a case involving a Mexican in the Supreme Court in the 50s. And then the same case came up with a Jewish person in the 60s. I can get the case law citations and I'll put them on the blog later over the weekend when I write all of this up. But the Supreme Court overruled itself because we have to allow, this ruling affects the rights of Jewish Americans to vote back for their government back in Israel. And, you know, we can't have that. The Supreme Court was right when we were going against a Mexican, but we're, oh my God, now that affects Jews too, we have to overrule our previous judgment. So, that's the deal with that. So Heidi Hendry's resume, if her resume was true, she did the crime of the breach of the Oath Act when she signed her form to be a political candidate for the Greens Party in Broken Hill, just before coming to Vietnam and getting her, I presume, job with ASIS as a foreign agent. Australia has been caught doing spy operations for commercial interests before. My father, Geoffrey McKee, who's very ill at the moment, I'm praying for him, he was interviewed by ABC TV. Remember, 40% of their journalists use a fake name, and they're probably stooges. ABC background briefing, do the walls have ears, about the Australian government spying on East Timor. My dad broke ranks. My dad was under ASIO surveillance all through the 90s because he defected to America. He worked with Neil Blue, who owns Petrogal, the former state oil company of Portugal that had the rights to East Timor in 1975. And it came out in the filings in, the 6th DC Circuit Court, that they gave the bank account, ANZ bank account number of Al Kateri's brother, the Prime Minister of East Timor, who was bribed $1 million US to make a treaty with Australia to steal all of East Timor's gas. And my dad's three-hour interview with ABC journalists was cut down to 10 seconds. By the way, Neil Blue owns General Atomics and General Atomics Aviation Systems. You may know them as the people who make the Predator spy plane. And when my dad was meeting with him in Sydney, I shook Neil Blue's hand. It's a small world. So, yeah, my father, that was a battle between American economic interests in East Timor for the gas and the energy security and Australia. And Australia built a rail line that would never make money from Alice Springs to Darwin for the purposes of building an oil pipeline along that, and they upgraded the port of Darwin, which they've now sold to the Chinese, and they did a contract to sell gas to China for 20 years at less than the normal price. So Australia basically is giving all that gas from East Timor to China.
Look, you've done a spectacular job of laying it out. It's sprawling, it's overwhelming, it's sordid, political, pedophilia, child sex trafficking, the whole bit. I let it go even when you were breaking up to illustrate the efforts to censor you, and I'm very glad you came back to be able to complete. You've done a wonderful job, Luke. We hope for your safety and well-being, because I fear you become a big target in the eyes of very powerful forces. So I cannot thank you enough for joining me today. Would you like to offer a final thought?
Yes, I would. Because I can't fix Australia from within, I am going to kneecap a $30 billion foreign trade agenda. I'm going to make, I've been in Asian countries for 16 years. I know the culture of Asian society. Asian parents don't have retirement homes when they get old. They invest their life savings in their kids' education to send them to Australia to give them a foreign, a so-called good education. When they find out that Sydney University is turning their young little Asian 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old girls into sex workers, and then the Australian government is collecting taxes based on the labours of their kids' sex organs, all the conservative Asian parents who fund Australia's trade surpluses with this foreign education business are going to find out what's really going on. That's how I'm going to get justice. I'm going to hit them where it hurts with their money and income from foreign students. And I'm going to make a website, so something along the lines of don't send them down under in 26 languages, and try and do a well-polished marketing campaign. Australia, and we all know Australian spies do things for people who threaten their trade interests. And so I am in a lot of danger, but I don't care. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And I'm not gonna do anything stupid. I have a loving family and two children. And I'm very glad that I ended up where I am, not in Australia.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...